You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A new documentary from Andy Abrahams Wilson called Under Our Skin follows various Americans affected by and living with Lyme disease. But it's more than just the story of the difficulties that people have coping with the illness. The film also reveals how and why Lyme disease treatment in the United States has become a controversial issue, with some doctors even losing their licenses because of the ways in which they have treated patients. Under Our Skin was an Audience Award finalist at the Tribeca Film Festival that opens tonight at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in Greenwich Village. And Andy Abrahams Wilson and Mandy Hughes, whose case is featured in the film, join me now. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andy, what got you interested in making a documentary about Lyme disease? Did you have a personal connection?
Well, I think you have to have a personal connection in order to delve into this disease. Otherwise, the assumption is, why are you interested in it? And that was where I was coming from before I was personally affected. A friend of mine got very sick in California with mysterious symptoms, severe neurological problems, and she was diagnosed with MS and then ALS, which is basically a death sentence, and then finally Lyme disease.
And, in California? I thought this was really an Eastern condition.
That's what I thought. And because my twin sister had Lyme disease maybe 10 years ago, she lives in upstate New York, and I just remember she was always sick and tired. And that's kind of what I remember about Lyme disease. And I remember that she complained that she couldn't get treated, and then she finally did get treated, and it seemed like it went away. So that was my only understanding of Lyme disease, and I think that's sort of what most people think about it.
It's interesting that she had been diagnosed with other things first. Is it really hard to diagnose Lyme disease?
You're talking about my friend in California. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very difficult to diagnose, and that's what one of the things that I did discover. Quite frankly, I was just shocked. I was shocked that Lyme disease could do that to you. I was shocked that it wasn't just on the East Coast. I was shocked to find that it affected so many people, and I was shocked that it wasn't easily diagnosed.
So you must have had no difficulty getting a lot of people who wanted to appear in your film.
Not at all. There are untold numbers of people who are afflicted with this, and they are falling through the cracks.
What about you, Mandy? Did you have any reservations about appearing in this film? Or did your husband? Why?
Well, just because of the nature of the disease and the path that we had to take, you know, just to receive treatment and to get a diagnosis, we knew that it wouldn't necessarily, you know, be easy, but that it's a story that must be told.
Because also it has to be very frustrating. People often are not paying attention or dismissing
yes.
you. Where were you physically when Andy began filming you?
Do you want to field that first?
I just want to mention here that it's one of the funny story is that Mandy sent us a letter almost as if this were an audition for a reality TV show.
Because you had a show business background, didn't you?
Well, I was an animal trainer, but...
At SeaWorld.
Yeah, it was more of a... act of desperation, I guess.
No, but she was. What it really showed is not that she was looking for some kind of celebrity, but she was so committed to this issue that had affected her so deeply, and she really wanted to educate other people so they didn't have to go through the same thing.
And you took a particularly close look at Mandy's situation because her case was so severe at the time?
Well, I think there were a lot of factors there. One factor was that she and her husband, pardon the expression, Mandy, was sort of the all-American couple, and they played good. They looked the part in a way, and she had just been diagnosed, even though she was sick for years and years, and she was starting her journey with Lyme disease treatment, just as she was starting her treatment. I mean, just she was starting her journey with marriage, and so that was the very first thing that we filmed. I went down to Florida by myself to film, and that really was what launched it.
And you just got married when the condition got really bad?
No, it was actually before that, 2 years prior, that I had really started to decline to the point where I couldn't really speak, I couldn't really walk. So I had to rest up for the wedding in order for me to be able to walk down the aisle.
Well, that puts a lot of pressure on on a marriage, doesn't it?
It does. Any major illness can take its toll on both the family and, you know, the marriage.
And Lyme disease was looming over that marriage. You know, I just dropped in with my camera, but you could feel it. I mean, you could sort of cut it with a knife, so to speak, that was the invisible force, was Lyme disease. And would Mandy get through the wedding? What was going to happen? You know, it was wonderful to see the support that she got from the family, it really was uncharted territory. We weren't sure which way it would go.
How old were you when you were diagnosed with Lyme disease?
The first time, 19. And then
didn't one specialist say to you, you're an attractive girl and clearly you don't feel like you're getting enough attention?
That is correct. I had been diagnosed three times with MS, and then it was retracted. And then I was diagnosed with dystonia, and then because I didn't feel that the doctor was really addressing some of the situations that I had, I think that doctor was a little offended and made the comment.
Now, why is it so hard to diagnose this illness? Doesn't it show up in your blood the way any other illness does?
Well, that's a good question. It's an obvious question. But the fact is... It's like throwing a dart at the wall towards a target, and maybe it'll hit and maybe it won't. Tests are about 50% accurate.
These are the cheater tests that they give?
Yes, and these are the standard conventional tests that if you go to your doctor and just get a Lyme disease test, that's what they'll do. So,
is that the best test? Are there other tests?
There are specialty, so-called specialty labs. They're controversial because the mainstream medical establishment doesn't like it. It's seen as a threat to their authority, but they are the labs that the so-called Lyme-literate physicians are using because they tend to be more accurate.
Now, what were you experiencing? First of all, did you have that roseate target thing that we often are told is the first sign, the bullseye, the first thing that suggests that you've been bitten by a tick?
Yes, when I was 19.
So wasn't that enough of a reason for somebody to say Lyme disease?
No, they were questioning it at that time as well, because I don't think that they were very confident at that time with trying to rule out, you know, everything else and rule in a diagnosis of Lyme. And then at that time, it became disseminated as well, which means it spread everywhere else. And I had large bullseye rashes all over my body. And I even had pictures of it to present to physicians once I started to, you know, digress again at age 22.
And what did they say when they saw those photographs?
Lyme can't do that. Lyme doesn't come back like that. You've already been treated.
So physicians don't know how to spot the bullseye rash, and that many physicians don't even know that that if you get a bullseye rash, that means you have Lyme disease. You don't even need to get a test. That's true even today.
A listener writes, a vet told him or her, I don't know what it is, that if you get the tick off before 48 hours have passed, it won't have time to get all of that stuff in your blood system. Is that true?
How do you know how long the tick's been there? Most of the time when you see it, how long has it been there? How long has it already been on you?
And then the follow-up is it important to take a shower? How good is it to remove the tick?
Yeah.
And what should you use, a match, tweezers? How do you get the head of the tick off?
Well, I think, first of all, I want to say that I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a physician. Although working 5 years on this film, I think in some ways I know more than a lot of physicians about Lyme disease.
And I'm sure that most of the people with Lyme disease know a lot more than the doctors do as well, because they have to, right?
Exactly. But that is a controversial point about how long the tick needs to be embedded before it can transmit Lyme. Some experts will say that 5 hours or 10 hours. You can't just assume that just because the tick has not been embedded for too long, that means you're not at risk for Lyme disease.
And I understand also the bullseye rash doesn't occur in all people.
Correct.
And who would think that something so small could pass so much through to the human body?
Well, what is it putting into your body, Mandy?
Well, I mean, it can put anything. American malaria, it can put cat scratch disease. I mean, that's just a couple.
But what is Lyme disease?
Well, that's another great question. Like, it seems like an obvious question, but
they haven't isolated a bacillus or.
Well, yes. I mean, Lyme disease is
spirochete.
It's a spirochete, which is a form of bacteria, and it's actually named after the person who discovered it, which is Willy Burgdorfer. It's called Borrelia burgdorferi, and it's a genetic cousin of syphilis, which is also a spirochete. And because it's a spirochete, a spiral-shaped microorganism, it can drill into different parts of the bodies. It does not just stay in the blood. It goes into the heart. It goes into the central nervous system. It goes into joint fluid, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why people with Lyme disease have multi-system, multi-symptom problems.
So you had the spirochete in your body.
Mm-hmm.
They took your blood.
Yes.
Did they not find the spirochete?
Several times they took my blood and they did not find the spirochete. Sometimes that can happen, they say, with advanced cases of Lyme. You know, it's just not really being detected by your body, but your body is deteriorating at the same time.
So you say advanced cases. Mm-hmm. You have an initial reaction and then there's a kind of a remission and then it comes back?
For me, that's how it worked. And, you know, a lot of times it can go undiagnosed, and really you're just making compensations as you're progressing with the disease until eventually it becomes an issue where you must do something.
Yeah, and generally it's not detected early on after infection. It usually takes several weeks for antibodies to be formed. And then in later infection, sometimes it's difficult to detect, or the body doesn't create antibodies anymore for various reasons. So I think the point that needs to be made is we need to have more good research on how to detect the bug. Why is it evading the immune system, and why is it resistant to antibiotics?
And how to remove.
How many reported new cases are there each year?
Well, that's also a good question. The official estimate based from the CDC is this year, last year, 2007, is 27,444 cases. Now, that in itself is a 37% increase from the previous year. But they also say that that number is from 6 to 12 times smaller than what the real cases may be, which make it, and this is really important to say, possibly over 300,000 cases a year, which is 10 times the number of HIV infections. And throw into that, add to it, avian flu, West Nile virus, and swine flu combined.
And we don't know the real numbers because it's so often misdiagnosed?
Because it's misdiagnosed and because it's underreported.
And think about it. If there's a 50% chance that if you were to go to the doctor, it's a 50-50 shot. Are you going to have Lyme? Are you not going to have Lyme? And a lot of times, you'll only be able to tell later once, you know, you've had to suffer through some disabilities.
And a lot of physicians don't want to report. They don't want to get involved in the Lyme disease issue. So if they even have a Lyme disease patient, they won't report it.
And we'll take a little break. We'll come back and find out why they don't want to report it. My guests are Andy Abrahams-Wilson, whose film Under Our Skin opens this weekend. Right? Is it opening today? Yeah, tonight at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in the Village. Also, Amanda Hughes, who is one of the people featured in the film, and they will both be in attendance during this weekend's screenings to answer questions, further questions. We will continue our conversation after this. I'm back with Andy Abrahams-Wilson. His latest film is called Under Our Skin, and it opens today at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in Greenwich Village. One of the people in the film is Mandy Hughes. She's also here. And we're talking about Lyme disease and why it is so hard to diagnose, and also why it's become such a controversial medical issue, which is pretty much a major portion of what the film is about, because we have these people who come down with this mysterious illness, and doctors tell them they don't have it. And that's what happened with you.
Yes.
So what happens when a doctor tells you it's all in your head?
Shock. And, you know, a bit of, you know, anger and frustration. Just because if you've gotten to a point where you've heard a lot of different, you know, symptoms and issues attached to, you know, what's going on with you, and no one seems to be able to resolve that and or come close, then, you know, the frustration builds. And every time you encounter a new physician that has something else to add to it, it just, you know, it ends up being a big mess.
And I'm going to jump in here. What Mandy's talking about, these sort of this maze of multiple doctors and multiple diagnoses,
and they all seem to disagree.
Yeah, but it's not. This is not just an isolated instance. It's not just Mandy. It's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, it's just unbelievable the untold numbers of people who have the same story.
So let's talk about some of the doctors. You mentioned Dr. Willie Bergdorfer, who discovered the spirochete that causes Lyme disease, and has it named after him, Borrelia Bergdorferi. When did he do that?
This was about 30 years ago.
So this is a long time now.
This is a long time.
And what about Dr. Alan MacDonald? Why is he significant to the story?
Well, he's significant because he's doing frontline research, and he's done research connecting Lyme disease to, as I spoke about before, its cousin, syphilis. And he's basically saying that there's a lot of similarities between syphilis and Lyme disease.
But syphilis does respond immediately to antibiotics.
Correct. And so the question is, why is this other bacteria, why is this other spirochete, Lyme disease, so difficult to detect and treat? And it's a more virulent bug.
And he also wants to know why roughly 50% of patients with Lyme disease turn up negative for the disease when they're initially tested.
Right.
Does anybody have any theory?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of theories that the bug changes its antigenic structure, which makes it more difficult for the antibodies to detect. It morphs into other forms. And then he had another more recent hypothesis or discovery, which is that the bacteria that cause Lyme actually sort of live in a biofilm, which is sort of like a gel-like structure, which makes it both difficult to detect the bacteria, but also difficult to treat.
Why have doctors lost their licenses or closed their practices because of the way they were treating patients?
Well, you know, it's curious, and this is a question that goes to the heart of our recent healthcare or our current healthcare debate.
Because one doctor even says that it's a political issue as well.
Absolutely. And why is it that patients in conversation with their physicians can't be treated? And why is it that physicians who are doing their best to help their patients risk losing their medical licenses?
Who takes the licenses away?
Well, they're state medical boards.
I mean, there are people who have botched up operations continually who continue to retain their licenses.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's so puzzling about this. Now, you know, if I hadn't spent so long working on this project and delving into the issue, I would believe some of what's said, which are these doctors are charlatans and they're just out to make money, to take advantage of sick, vulnerable patients. That's what's being said. And that's the sort of the assumption that's being made about these doctors.
Well, there are people who are suspicious of everything. Michael Savage, that brilliant talk show host, claimed that I think it was 96% of all autism cases are fake. They're just people who are trying to scam the system.
Right, right.
I guess he's never seen an autistic
right.
kid.
And curiously, you know, a lot of kids who are diagnosed with autism end up having Lyme disease. They get
Why
treated.
Why is that?
Well,
again.
Why is that? It's a neurological condition. Nobody knows what causes autism. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, Lyme disease it may be the culprit. Lyme disease does cause the cognitive and neurological issues. And in children, often it's diagnosed as autism.
Some doctors don't believe in using antibiotics in treating this. Why?
Well, because most, they don't believe in late stage or chronic Lyme.
So there's another problem here. There's some doctors believe you can have Lyme disease, but it's just something
easy
that hits you
treat,
right away. And
hard
then
to get.
We got a call from a listener, George, in Astoria. He said, I was diagnosed last summer. I caught it quick because of multiple bullseye marks on my body. I went through a 4-week antibiotic regimen. What are the chances it will recur? My doctor says I'm fine. Is she right?
Well, for sure, I'm not 100% that it, you know, will come back, but I know that it did with me. And by the time that, she stated that she had multiple bullseye rashes, I did as well. And that was called disseminated Lyme. And that came a little later, and it had already become chronic for me.
But have you been treated like this person was?
I had been treated with 2 weeks of antibiotics. I think it was tetracycline. And
that's pretty strong stuff.
Yeah. And that is the current standard of care for Lyme disease. And then the problem was is that what was not factored in were co-infections. And co-infections can make the Lyme stick around. And then...
Is this an opportunistic disease
yes,
as well?
Yes. And so then I was 21, 22. And, you know, just like any chronic illness, you can have a major life event, a stressor, or something happen, and it can trigger it again. And that it did.
Now, you look great now.
Thank you.
Are you past it?
Or anything's better than what you saw, right?
Yeah, you look pretty.
But what people don't know.
I don't know what word I want to use, but it was having a terrible effect on you in the film.
Yeah, and what people don't know, because we're speaking and people don't get to see and they haven't seen the film, is that Mandy looked like she was on her deathbed. And
I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I was in a wheelchair. So, yeah.
And now you just wonder, you know, what if she had accepted all those doctors' diagnoses and assumptions that it was all in her head, that she didn't have Lyme disease, that she shouldn't be treated for Lyme disease. I it's hard to say with Mandy sitting right here next to me, but she might not be here today.
I don't think I would have been. My body had stopped digesting food and organ systems had started to shut down. So I don't think that I would have been here, my personal opinion, just knowing everything that I've been through. And, you know, there were a lot of doctors who wanted to know more about what was going on with me because they took a little more time than the general doctor's visit that you get today. And so they knew
they could see you were at death's door.
Well, they knew a little bit about me. They saw that I was desperate to find answers. So I think that the one doctor who said that it was in my head, I think that it was because he didn't take the time. That he didn't know me.
So what turned it around for you?
Well, my family, they're pretty well-read, and my aunt had Lyme disease, and she had gotten it. And she said, you know, Mandy, I think that you had Lyme. And my mom, being the smart mother that she is, had taken pictures back when I was 19, and I had the original bite pictures, and I had, you know, the disseminated rash, everything. And I was taken around to physicians. And finally, I called a doctor in California because that's how desperate I was. And the doctor in California had recommended Dr. Joseph Jemczak to me in North Carolina at the time. And so we drove from Orlando, Florida to North Carolina, and I was very sick. So it would be like taking, we had to put my wheelchair in. It was a big trip, big undertaking. And my husband had to drive. And we went to go see Dr. Jemczak, and he spent 2 hours with me and for my first visit.
My guests are Mandy Hughes, who has had Lyme disease and is one of the people featured in a new film called Under Our Skin, which opens today at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in the Village. Also with us is Andy Abrahams-Wilson, the maker of that film. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Dr. Jemczak is one of the doctors who is most committed to treating Lyme disease, and he seems to be in some kind of war of words with another doctor, Gary Wormser. So can you tell us a bit about how that worked out? Gary Wormser is somebody who's pretty much convinced that there is no such thing as Lyme disease or that it's been overstated?
Basically, there's two camps. And instead of getting personal, I think it's fair to say there are two camps. And one camp is that, and this is the medical orthodoxy, and that camp is that Lyme disease is easily detected and easily treated, meaning 2 to 4 weeks of antibiotics is enough to take care of it. And if you have any lingering symptoms, it's because it's just the stressors of daily living, or it's some kind of autoimmune disease, or we just don't know. And they send you to specialist after specialist, and they'll put you on painkillers or psychotropic medication. The other side says that no, Lyme disease is not so easy to diagnose or treat, and that sometimes it takes months or even years to treat, way beyond the standard 2 to 4 weeks of antibiotic therapy. Now, you know, within that debate, there's a lot of important questions, and one of them is the overuse of antibiotics. And there is a mandate in the medical profession not to overuse antibiotics. And so they're afraid of antibiotic-resistant germs, and they say there's complications. But basically, you know, what do you do when people are so sick? When people have cancer, they get chemotherapy and radiation. That could kill them sometimes. But we don't even think about it. We give them treatment that could save their lives.
There's another factor here, isn't there, that the there are guidelines for Lyme disease in the IDSA. And they suggest that the kind of treatment you were given by Dr. Jemczyk and that Dr. Jones also administers is overkill.
Well, but I've had people tell me that they'll just, you know, that they're given medication for life for acne. And sometimes it's the same strength as medication that you take for Lyme. So, you know, yes, that is correct. But based on how I was and how I am now, I believe in the treatment wholeheartedly.
And then Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal got involved in this. He investigated the IDSA.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, he corroborated the research that we did in the film, meaning we did all the investigation and uncovered basically what he did as well, which is that there are significant conflicts of interest of the people on the IDSA Lyme Guidelines panel, and he's basically saying that that's corrupting their advice.
Well, why would there be any kind of conflict of interest? Either you believe that there is this Lyme disease condition or you don't.
Well, but people who are on guidelines writing committees, and it's not just Lyme disease, there are other guidelines, medical guidelines, that they shouldn't have conflicts of interest. Now, if they do have conflicts of interest, then it puts everything that they're writing into question. How does it benefit them? And in this case, in the case of Lyme disease, we found significant conflicts of interest that 11 out of 14 of the members stood to profit from their recommendations in some way, either by patents on the organism or co-infections, test kits, vaccines. So it is no small matter, and it's not limited to Lyme disease.
But basically, Lyme, I personally don't think that Lyme is what they once said it was. And we need an unbiased group of people to be able to view that.
It's part of the problem also that it doesn't always follow the same course. We got a comment from a listener, Christina in Harlem. She said that she got a deer tick bite and the bullseye rash when she was 14, and it was treated at the time, and it's never come back.
That's great.
Well, yes, and that's we don't want to scare people by saying if you have Lyme disease, you're going to get sick. The same thing that happened to Mandy is going to happen to you. The point
but
of this
could.
Is, well, it could, but
and
the
that's
point
what
is,
I don't want.
The point is, if you're treated, if you're diagnosed early and treated adequately early on, you're probably going to be fine. But what's happening is, as we've discussed before, doctors do not know how to diagnose it, and they don't know how to treat it. And in many cases, they don't even want to go near it because it's so controversial.
Aren't some of the medications difficult to obtain?
No, but I did have to take, you know, malaria drugs and things like that because I have a version of malaria contracted by the same tick bite. But it's, you know, it's not to scare people. I don't want anyone to have to go down this road because it is a long and lonely road to go down. It's very painful, and if we can do anything to create awareness, which would stimulate research, that would be a wonderful thing.
Have pretty much all the people that you profiled in the film bounce back the way Mandy has?
The major characters in the film have done well, but there's also many people that I've come into contact through the years who have not done so well, and there's a couple of people who've died.
And what's happened to Doctors Jemsek and Jones? Haven't they been affected by the way they've been dealing with this?
Yeah, well, Dr. Jemsek, and that's Mandy's doctor, his license was suspended. It was stayed.
In North Carolina.
This is in North Carolina. His license, it was stayed, but the damage was done, and Blue Cross revoked their contract and sued him for $100 million. And,
oh, my.
Basically forced him out of business, and now he's relocated to South Carolina. He's doing his Lyme practice there. But at the time, he was one of the first HIV physicians in the South, in the Southeast, and so he had a lot of HIV/AIDS patients, and then along came Lyme disease. So he was treating HIV and Lyme, and he said that his Lyme disease population was much more severely debilitated than AIDS.
Thank you both so much for being with us, Andy Abrahams-Wilson and Mandy Hughes. The film Under Our Skin opens today at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in Greenwich Village, and they will be in attendance throughout the weekend for screenings and answering questions. Thank you again.
Thank you.